critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
This is Ann Johnson. For 14 years, I've owned Brightside Natural Health. The prophecies of Revelation are being fulfilled at an amazing rate, and the kingdom of God is at hand. My passion is to follow God's command to heal the sick and share the reality of Jesus Christ. God faithfully shows me effective, life-changing products like Vital PSP. PSP helps the body heal itself the way God intended. God promises to be present in the midst of your storm. Stop the storm and enjoy God's abundant health. Call me at 303-833-2784.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots, biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath.
Freedom Network. And of course, our guest this morning is Melanie Miller, and we're going to be talking to her about her book on Governor Morris. Melanie, are you there? Well, I don't hear Melanie coming on. So,
well, you hear me now?
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Yep. Good morning.
I was a little worried I was going to have to do an hour monologue, which is always a little embarrassing, but Melanie was with us the other evening. And this is really a very unusual woman. She started out as an aeronautical engineer, which is a rather strange profession. Usually we don't see women as aeronautical engineers. Maybe we do. If they do, I don't know about it. But then she went to law school, and then she got her PhD in history. And she has written extensively. She was fascinated by a man named Governor Morris, and she wrote a book about this, and this is what we're going to be talking about this morning. And certainly, I think people ought to begin knowing who Governor Morris was. What was he governor of?
Well, he actually wasn't a governor of anything. His name is a Huguenot name. It came from his mother's family. And it's spelled gouverneur, which is how I pronounce it, but there is discussion about whether or not that's really the way to say it. But it makes it easier to remember he wasn't a governor, so I call him gouverneur.
He wasn't a governor at all. His mother's last name was governor or gouverneur. But he was one of the main people involved during the time of our Revolutionary War, during the time of the writing of our Constitution. He actually succeeded Thomas Jefferson as ambassador to France during the time of the French Revolution, immediately following that. And he played an important part in shaping the country we live in today. So with that as a background, why don't you pick up the story, why you became interested in Governor Morris, the part that he played as far as the writing of our Constitution. Now, I don't think he was there when they declared wrote the Declaration of Independence, but certainly he was instrumental in getting that ratified in New York, where he lives. So pick the story up.
Well, that's right. Well, he actually, his half-brother was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. But Morris was a New Yorker, and he was young when the Revolution started, and he was a really already remarkable for his talents. He could write beautifully. He spoke very well. And he had a great command of math and finance. When he was only something like 18, he wrote a remarkable piece that was published about a proposal before the New York Assembly on issuing certificates. So people already knew that he had a lot to offer. And then during the American Revolution, he was sent to the Continental Congress and became a very important person in terms of their committees. He was appointed to something like 65 committees, and he chaired an awful lot of them, and he pointed out that that really meant he had to do all the work. And he wrote the documents that the Continental Congress issued, nearly all of them. He just wrote them in a rapid-fire way, and he was also important because he worked with George Washington, whom he got very fond of, to reform the Army regulations and to make provisioning of the Army work, because that was one of the big problems during the early years of the American Revolution. So he had quite a bit to do with the American Revolution, even though he didn't fight in it.
Well, here was a man who actually graduated from college when he was 16 years of age, and then started an apprentice as a lawyer. And, of course, in those days, you didn't go to law school. You became an apprentice. And of course, when the revolution came along, basically this divided the country. And many people certainly may not have been happy with England, but the last thing they wanted was an armed revolution. They felt that it would be, very destructive. Certainly there was a great deal to be admired in British law. It was simply that King George III was doing everything he could to be autocratic and try to crush resistance rather than to compromise with the colonists. And so this really divided, the country. Some people were loyalists and others were considered themselves patriots, and actually it divided Morris's family, divided him from his friends. But he embraced this idea of a new nation where men could be free, and certainly was instrumental in writing the Constitution. Of course, it was James Madison, the father of the Constitution, but Morris actually played a very important part in the preamble to the Constitution, which is really one of the most important parts of the Constitution. What was that all about?
Well, Morris, during the convention, even though there were a lot of people who didn't agree with him on various issues, they all came to recognize how talented he was. And at the end of the summer, when they had to take all the rough parts that they had agreed to together, to put them together, they asked him to do the drafting of the final document. And as Madison himself said later, they couldn't have made a better choice. He put them together. It is a beautifully constructed document. And he also wrote the preamble, which everybody has heard, we the people of the United States in order to form a more perfect union, etc. And he wrote it that way because as it was originally drafted, it was simply a list of the 13 states. And he wanted to make it clear that this document was intended as a national document, that it spoke for all Americans and that they should think of themselves as part of a single country. So those are important words, and they are familiar to people, even if Gouverneur Morris isn't.
Right, and of course, if you go back and you read that preamble, it was just so beautifully crafted and, of course, followed through in such a logical manner. And I think that was really one of his gifts. He had a brilliant mind, and he could organize things, and this is why people looked to him for his writings and his advice, even though apparently he was a very irritating individual. Many, many people disliked him because he was always making jokes and smiling, and yet, of course, he was the fellow who was always on his feet in his discussion, interjecting his ideas, even if they weren't popular and even if they weren't accepted. Well, we'll be back in just a moment here.
Constitutional Moments are brought to you throughout the day through the generosity of C&C Prototype Machine, Boulder, Colorado. The American Freedom Network is not funded or supported by special interest groups or government programs. The American Freedom Network is not sponsored by advertisers demanding content or programming control. The American Freedom Network is solely funded by you, the listener. Please help keep the American Freedom Network on the air by purchasing one of our sponsors' fine products or by calling 1-800-205-6245 to make a donation. The American Freedom Network needs your help.
You may not plant a 250,000 acres every season or 10-50,000 head of cattle, but it's good to know that your equipment could. Tartar Farm and Ranch equipment is used and trusted by pros because it's built by pros, using more than 60 years of know-how and the industry's most durable finishes. From farming and cattle handling to goat and equine management, don't trust anything less. To find a farm and ranch store near you, visit tartargate.com. Tartar, working harder since 1945.
We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Millions of women have been misdiagnosed and been given dangerous prescription drugs. In reality, they're simply suffering from hormone imbalance. Stress, environmental chemicals, poor nutrition, and age all can affect your hormones. Do you have hormone deficiency? Find out with our simple self-test that will help you determine if your hormones are suboptimal. Call Radiant Clinic at 970-278-0900 for your free test or visit our website at radiantcliniccolorado.com.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network, our guest this morning, Melanie Miller, we're talking about her book on Governor Morris. What was the exact title of that?
It's called An Incautious Man, The Life of Governor Morris.
Right, and it's and basically because it was just coincidence that during the break they actually played those words to the preamble of the Constitution, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility. I mean, those were the words that he had actually written, and yet most people have never heard of Governor Morris, and yet he was instrumental. He was one of the primary founding fathers, and why has he really sort of been relegated to, obscurity?
Well, there are a number of reasons. I think maybe a very important one is that he really did not care what posterity thought. He cared what the people he respected thought of him, but he didn't spend a lot of time polishing up memoirs to act as public relations for his posterity. But also, I think he belonged to what was called the Federalist Party. As the 1790s went along, the Americans really began to divide into parties, which was something Washington had hoped wouldn't happen. And Morris was a Federalist. He believed in a strong national government. And Jefferson, Madison, Monroe belonged to the anti-Federalists, or also called Republicans. And they won in the end. Their presidents were successful. They dominated Congress. So he was kind of on the losing end of that, and that probably also had to do with his obscurity.
Well, I think it's interesting that, Sidney, the idea of forming America was so different and radical from anything that ever existed before. There's always been a king or a dictator or a pharaoh or somebody had to be in charge. And, of course, there were many people when we established our government who wanted a monarchy. They wanted to be George Washington, to be the king. They were looking for strong leadership, and that was, of course, what the Federalists wanted. And then there were those radicals like Jefferson and Madison and Monroe and the others who wanted to limit the power of government, which was the genius of America. And that was really what was recorded in the Constitution. It was not a powerful centralized government. It was a decentralized government with limited powers, limited by the chains of the Constitution, as Jefferson said, and let's take the chains off the people and put them on the government. And, of course, Morris, as I read your book, had really been certainly educated in the classics. I mean, he knew the history, knew it very, very well, and recognizes throughout history there had always been the strong man in every society, and I guess he felt we needed the one here.
Well, I think he felt in, that the role of the executive, he felt that there had to be an executive because they had had none during the Confederation period, and that really had not been at all successful. But he saw the role of the president as someone who would protect the people from the excesses of Congress, and he felt that that was critical. He thought that they should be a president should be elected directly by the people. He was against the initial idea of having the Senate appoint the president, and he just felt very strongly that if you didn't have these kinds of checks and balances, that you could have a Congress that would trample the rights of the people, and that would be the role of the president to protect people against that. But at the same time, the president had to be limited so that he couldn't become a despot or a king.
Well, I think all of our founding fathers feared, you know, what we're moving toward today with an all-powerful centralized government that can regulate every aspect of our lives. Well, anyway, of course, as far as Governor Morris was concerned, he actually had the opportunity then of going to France. Was he there during the French Revolution or in the immediate aftermath of it?
No, he was there just as he arrived about 3 months before the opening of what was called the Estates General, and that was really the beginning of you want to look on it as the opening of the French Revolution or the end of the monarchy. The Louis XVI had been forced to call a convocation of people from the three estates, the commoners, the clergy, and the aristocracy, because they were unwilling to pass his financial. He asked for more taxes because France was in a terrible financial fix. So Morris got there in time to see this happening, and he got involved very quickly with some of the most prominent people that were involved in it, Lafayette and others. He became a friend of many of the counselors of the king, and actually Louis XVI asked his advice on things, and Morris wrote a number of memos to him. And then he wasn't actually appointed minister to France until 1792, and that was only a few months before the king finally fell. And Morris actually tried to help the royal family escape from Paris. He saw that it was going to come to this, and he felt that they should try to get out of Paris, but unfortunately that didn't work, and as we all know, Louis was executed, and then, of course, later on, Marie Antoinette was executed. So, and then the revolutionary governments after that, there were many of them. While Morris was minister, there were something like seven different regimes that he had to deal with. But he was there for the worst of the terror, the worst violence, and it was quite an ordeal. He was the only diplomat to stay in Paris after the king fell. So it was quite an adventure, but it was an ordeal.
And I don't think most Americans really understand the French Revolution or why the French Revolution was different than the American Revolution, or that these two revolutions were the beginning of this move toward the World Revolution, which is still going on today. And first, this is has been an ongoing process for over 200 years, as revolution after revolution is being coordinated and orchestrated to transform the world. But certainly, the French Revolution, I think, was the far different than the American Revolution, wasn't it?
Oh yes. In fact, that's one of the things that Morris immediately saw, was that the French were just not ready for an American form of government. They certainly needed reforms. It was a stultified society with privileges that were just outrageous, that the aristocracy had, and the oppression was very unjust. But at the same time, they simply didn't have any tradition of self-government, so that he felt very strongly that the only hope for them was a good constitutional monarchy. And unfortunately, things just began to get out of control, and he actually saw that. He predicted very early on that unless they showed more restraint and tried to get the aristocracy to feel that it was invested in these reforms, that the whole thing would go to pieces, and then they would end up with a despot, which, of course, they ended up with Napoleon.
Absolutely. And so they did away with one despot, and they got another despot. And, of course, Napoleon plunged all of Europe into war. Which is, of course, what despots do. A wonderful way of getting the people's attention off of their suffering, and now we have an enemy, and we need an all-powerful government to protect us from that ruthless enemy, whoever it may be. Well, anyway, of course, Governor Morris, though, I got into really some difficulty because of support of Lafayette, and Lafayette really was a very important figure, not only in French history, but in American history. And there was a friendship there between Morris and Lafayette, and Morris had spent a great deal of time trying to get Lafayette out of prison. Do you want to talk a little bit about Lafayette and of course, Morris's relationship with him?
Yes, well, Morris actually first met him at Valley Forge. They both had a kind of, were sort of surrogate sons to Washington, and Morris was very impressed with him. So when he went over to France, he was glad to give him advice on how to write constitutions because Lafayette was busy trying to draft a constitution and a Bill of Rights. Jefferson was helping him too. But Morris soon saw that Lafayette was really too ambitious to be able to handle. Lafayette saw himself, I think, as sort of a second Washington for France, and he just didn't have the qualities that were necessary for that. He loved being worshipped, and he really didn't show much sense about much judgment about how to handle the power he got because he was very popular there for a while. And Morris tried to warn him, but naturally Lafayette didn't want to hear that. So the king didn't get along with Lafayette. One of the reasons that the escape plans didn't work that summer was because they involved Lafayette, and the king didn't trust him. But after he fell, that was the end of Lafayette's position, and he tried to run away from France. He fled, and he was captured by the Prussians and thrown into an Austrian prison for about 5 years. He didn't get out until 1797, and Morris did indeed spend quite a bit of time. He went to England and he went to Vienna trying to get them to let Lafayette out. But, you know, I think, and also Morris loaned his wife money because she had a lot of debts that she had to pay. And
you're talking about Lafayette had a lot of debts.
Yes, Lafayette did. And he had basically spent his fortune. As Morris said, he spent his fortune, and the wheel he started in motion has crushed him. But he also helped Madame Lafayette because she was arrested during what was called the Great Terror, which was one of the worst periods of the terror, and she was brought to Paris and probably would have been executed, but Morris wrote letters to the governing authority and basically begged them not to do that, and so she was allowed to live. But there wasn't a lot of gratitude there. I think they never cared for Morris's criticisms of Lafayette, so it made for a rather tepid relationship later on. But Morris really appreciated all that Lafayette had done for our country, and he also knew how much Washington cared about him. Washington was very fond of Lafayette.
I mean, I think the nice thing about your book is it's a wonderful review of the history of that time, written from the point of view of one of the men who helped to shape the American experience and was actually over there in France during those tumultuous times when the Great Revolution, the Second Great Revolution, of the 18th century was taking place, and of course, this was then to begin to shape the entire world. And I'm not certain most people in France or even Morris really understood the implications of the French Revolution, but certainly the people in Europe did, because the reason that they put Lafayette in prison was because he was part of this movement, and there was a movement at that time that was challenging, you know, the structure of Europe and the crown princes, and there was an effort, a very organized effort, to do away with all of the monarchies and all of the religions, to destroy everything and try to create this new utopian world. And wasn't that the reason that really Lafayette was put away? Because he was a challenge, he was a danger, he was a threat to the existing social order?
Well, I think he was certainly perceived as they blamed him for what was happening in the French Revolution. Yes, he was seen that way.
And don't you think he was responsible for what happened, at least? And he represented the people that were there very much in favor of overthrowing the existing social structure.
Well, I think you're quite right. I think, in fact, Jefferson deserves some of the credit or blame, depending on how you want to look at it, too, because he consulted with Lafayette at great length about this. And but yes, there's no question it all began with Lafayette and his group of what we call the Patriot or Reforming Party. And then it just took on a life of its own.
And ended up, of course, with the Great Terror and the mass executions. And people here have little idea how horrible things were at that time as fear stalked the streets.
Well, I should add, too, though, you know, that Morris and other Americans also saw the French Revolution as a as the beginning of a what they hoped would be a wave across Europe to throw out the old corrupt monarchies. Morris said that repeatedly. There's a wonderful quote from him where he talks about he loves the French, he feels grateful for their efforts in our cause, and that he considered the establishment of a good constitution in France as the principal means of extending the blessings of freedom to, he called them, the many millions of my fellow men who groan in bondage on the continent of Europe. But then he had this great line. He said, "But I do not greatly indulge the flattering illusions of hope, because I do not yet perceive that reformation of morals without which liberty is but an empty sound."
And, of course, the French threw out all religious restrictions of any religious belief, tried to create a society on the goodness of man. It just doesn't work. We'll be back in just a moment with Melody Miller.
And I approve this message.
This is Ray Schonke. I played football with the Washington Redskins. Now I'm president of American Hunters and Shooters Association. It's important to me that our next president protects our Second Amendment rights to own guns and defend ourselves. Barack Obama and John McCain will both make sure we keep our guns. But what about keeping our jobs? Barack's got a real plan that invests in creating jobs here at home and cuts taxes $1,000 for working families. John McCain? I saw a lot of cheap shots in my day, but McCain's false attacks on Obama are just a fake to hide the ball. His plan sells out American workers. McCain will keep giving tax breaks to companies that ship our jobs overseas, and he'll look the other way while China breaks our trade deals. It's the same old Bush playbook. Look, when a coach loses 8 years in a row, you don't bring him back for a ninth season. We just can't afford more of the same. Paid for by Obama for America.
I'm Ann Johnson. For over 11 years, I've owned a health food store. I'm an iridologist, herbalist, and perform extensive muscle testing to find out what products best meet my customers' health needs. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about Vital PSP. It consistently surpasses over 3,000 samples in my test kit. My customers are having amazing fast results. Vital PSP has profound effects at DNA levels. If you struggle with any health issues, I recommend you call me, 303-833-2784.
Diets simply don't work. 90% of dieters lose a few pounds, but then gain them right back, every time. At Radiant Clinic, we look at the cause of disease rather than merely treating the symptoms. We optimize thyroid and adrenal function, balance brain chemistry and hormones, all of which can cause weight gain. Our medical weight loss program will actually reset your metabolism so the pounds stay off permanently. Call Radiant Clinic at 970-278-0900 and ask for your free guide to permanent weight loss, or visit our website at RadiantClinicColorado.com.
Come and celebrate Sunday, September the 28th at 4 p.m. It's the Feast of Trumpets and Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. Beth Messiah Congregation will be blowing the shofar, announcing the seventh month and the Feast of Trumpets. Everyone is invited to join in the celebration. There'll be a teaching of the major importance of the Feast of Trumpets and Tashlik. That's the casting of the stone into the water. The celebration begins at 4 p.m. Bring your favorite dish to share. Anointed Messianic music by featured Messianic recording artist Jonathan Sattel. Other special celebration features, the Intercourt Praise Dancers, plus special music by the Mendez Brothers. The location, 11801 North Glen. That's the E.B. Rains Lake Park, across the street from the Northland Community Center. For more information, call 1-800-205-6245. That's 1-800-205-6245.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network, I guess this morning, with Melanie Miller. And Melanie, before we go on, would you like to get your telephone number out, tell people how they get copies of your book?
Yes. Well, they can get it on the ISI Books website or on Amazon. Either way, I think there, the other regular book outlets like Barnes & Noble and so forth would also be able to order it.
And once again, the title is?
The title of it is An Incautious Man, The Life of Gouverneur Morris.
Okay, fine. Well, our telephone number is 970-689-8255. That's 970-689-8255. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question you'd like to ask Melanie, she's certainly one of the, I guess, the expert on Governor Morris, because she actually gone through his diaries. Apparently he left extensive papers and writings, and nobody's ever gone through them much before. Where are these papers and his diary at the present time?
Well, his diaries are in, his papers are in three main locations, Columbia University, the American Philosophical Society in Philadelphia, and mostly at the Library of Congress. That's where his diaries are. And I got to go work with the originals a couple months ago in Washington, and it was quite interesting to see them. He wrote every day from the time he started them until which was right when he arrived in France, until he died. And he did have a few love affairs, and those details were mostly inked out by the woman he married quite a bit later in life, because they weren't considered proper reading. They're just really fascinating to read, because everything about him is just right in there. Everything he's thinking, conversations he has with people, and his impressions of them, descriptions of what was happening in France. And they're really enjoyable to read.
Well, it's sort of like being one with history. You know, I've done a little bit of research myself, nothing like you've done, but it's, going through the papers of important people, and you almost feel that you know them.
Yes, it's in Morris's case. We don't have. He didn't leave an estate that we could see. That's all gone now. But we can find him in the diaries. He just seems to come to life. Because he wasn't stilted. He was just an engaging and an exuberant person, and he was writing to himself in these diaries, not for posterity again. And so we really get an idea what he was like.
And, he was sort of a self-made man. His grandfather had been quite wealthy, but in fact his dad, he had bought a little small tract of land in New York, an area that today is the Bronx. But eventually, of course, the family wealth didn't go to Governor Morris. He had to do it on his own. He was a lawyer, and apparently had done quite well, and was really very generous with what he had.
Yes, he was. And he made, I think, probably a fair amount of his money on acting as an agent in land sales. There were huge tracts in upstate New York that went up for sale after the Constitution was signed, and Morris sold some of these or brokered the sales of some of these to Europeans when he was over in Europe. So I think that had quite a bit to do with him being comfortable. But he did always help people that came to him for help.
And apparently he was in England, too, for a time, wasn't he, following the French Revolution?
Yes. Well, actually, both during and after. He was sent by Washington on an interesting mission over there in 1790, because the peace treaty between America and Britain really, even though they had agreed to the terms, the British weren't fulfilling all of them. And in particular, there were some posts, some forts up in the northwest, which the British were supposed to relinquish back to American control, and they were not doing it. So Morris was sent over to talk to the British by Washington about trying to complete this. And so he got to know people there in the cabinet. And then later on, when he left France, he did stay in England for about a year. One of his brothers, his half-brothers, who had been a loyalist, lived there. And he visited with him. So it was one of the very interesting things to me about the American Revolution was that there didn't seem to be this residual bitterness that you might expect from a war, in the sense that families reunited and friendships were restored. And Morris is a really good example of that, because he saw many people who had been on the other side when he traveled about, and there was never really any animosity there.
Well, you could understand why many people didn't want the Revolutionary War, and of course, why other people did. And it even split his family. It wasn't his mother a loyalist, and some of his siblings loyalists.
That's right. They were, and one of his best friends from the law office he had worked in was a loyalist and had to leave to go to England. And Morris respected their opinions.
Well, what about did some of the loyalists stay here in America after the revolution, or were the loyalists literally driven out by the patriots?
Well, in some cases they were driven out. In other cases, of course, in New York, for example, once that was behind British lines, they just stayed there for the duration of the war. His mother stayed at their home in Morrisania throughout the war. But many of them had to leave because especially the men, because they had to sign oaths and agree to help in the cause. And if they didn't do that, then they really had to go. One of the man that was the head of Morris's law office, who actually had objected to a lot of things about British rule but never wanted to have a war with Britain, was forced to leave. And he ended up, he never returned. He went to Canada eventually. But many came back.
Well, I think it's so tragic as you look at this because, of course, the patriots wanted to do something different. The loyalists, many of them might have agreed with the ideology, but felt that the war is a terrible, terrible thing. And I think wars are terrible, terrible things. I think America is the most wonderful country, and it resulted from the American Revolution. But as I look at the world going on today and the horror of the wars, and I'm sure Governor Morris knew, the wars in the past and how futile so many of the efforts are, and yet he embraced the cause of the American Revolution, knowing full well the implications. And, of course, the horror that would befall the patriots if they had lost that war.
Yes, I agree with you. It's kind of extraordinary that they did finally make the decision to just go to war. It's one of the things it's just interesting to think about when you consider the American Revolution.
Well, and especially when they went up across the most powerful nation in the world at that time, which was the British, with their army, their armies and their navy. And, here's this ragtag group that really just coming up with this crazy idea of wanting to create a nation where people could be free, going up against Great Britain with the tradition, really, of individual liberty and freedom, was well defended and admired by the people. The only trouble was that the king had his own ideas and would not allow anyone to dissent with him, and that's really the reason it really forced the patriots to take a stand against him. When the government became autocratic, the British government, it began to violate its own laws.
That's right. And there were plenty in Parliament who thought that the American relations were being very badly handled.
Right. In fact, some of them, Edmund Burke even spoke out in support of the upstart revolutionaries in the United States. Well, give us a call, 970-689-8255. 970-689-8255.
Tapes of the preceding show are available by calling 1-800-205-6245. The American Freedom Network.
I'm Barack Obama, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
This is Ray Schonke. I played football with the Washington Redskins. Now I'm president of the American Hunters and Shooters Association. It's important to me that our next president protects our Second Amendment rights to own guns and defend ourselves. Barack Obama and John McCain will both make sure we keep our guns. But what about keeping our jobs? Barack's got a real plan that invests in creating jobs here at home and cuts taxes $1,000 for working families. John McCain? I saw a lot of cheap shots in my day. But McCain's false attacks on Obama are just a fake to hide the ball. His plan sells out American workers. McCain will keep giving tax breaks to companies that ship our jobs overseas. And he'll look the other way while China breaks our trade deals. It's the same old Bush playbook. Look, when the coach loses 8 years in a row, you don't bring him back for a ninth season. We just can't afford more of the same. Paid for by Obama for America.
Come and celebrate Sunday, September the 28th at 4 p.m. It's the Feast of Trumpets and Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. Beth Messiah Congregation will be blowing the shofar, announcing the seventh month and the Feast of Trumpets. Everyone is invited to join in the celebration. There'll be a teaching of the major importance of the Feast of Trumpets and Tashlich. That's the casting of the stone into the water. The celebration begins at 4 p.m. Bring your favorite dish to share. Anointed Messianic music by featured Messianic recording artist Jonathan Sattel. Other special celebration features, the Intercourt Praise Dancers, plus special music by the Mendez Brothers. The location, 11801 North Glen. That's the E.B. Rains Lake Park, across the street from the Northland Community Center. For more information, call 1-800-205-6245. That's 1-800-205-6245.
Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest this morning, Melanie Miller, has written a fascinating book, a fascinating historical book about Governor Morris. And really, as you read it, of course, you understand so much of what happened at the time of the American Revolution, that exciting and frightening time. And then after the American government is established, you know, and he plays the part in writing the Constitution. And then, of course, he's sent to France. Remember the Constitution written in 1787, 1789, it's ratified, and of course our government then starts, and then of course we have the French Revolution, where of course really was one of the great defining events of all time, a revolution that continues, a world revolution that continues to this very day. Well, certainly, Melanie, as you must be talking to others about your book, what sort of response are you getting from the people you talk to?
Well, I think it's what I might have expected, is that he really is not well known, and that people are just surprised to hear that there was even such a person, and that there would be someone who was quite as modern as Morris seemed to be in a way. I don't know if I articulate that quite right, but there's just something about his writing that seems very up to date, and that's why I do think people would enjoy reading him, because his language is just very immediate. And well, I think people are interested in the fact that he had a wooden leg.
he had a wooden leg, and
he did, and you know, that must have been a great burden for him. He lost it in a carriage accident, and it was very painful, and there was a question about whether it really needed to be amputated, but it was done, and that was it, and he really never complained about it. Now and then he would mention in his diary that it would bother him some. He would get inflammations that really hurt. And the worst thing of all was that gout ran in his family, so he got terrible gout in the remaining foot. So that must have been really dreadful. But he, you know, he walked miles every day. He stayed very active, and it certainly didn't keep him from going to Europe and having a very fulfilling life.
And first, we're really playing a part, you know, in the affairs of state over there, and certainly in his relationship with Lafayette, who was one of the primary instigators of the revolution, and then, of course, of the dire consequences that resulted. Because when you start a revolution, just as when you start a war, you never know how it's going to end. And, of course, Lafayette, of course, you know, pushing the idea of the revolution, and then, of course, eventually he himself was almost consumed and destroyed, and his family was almost consumed and destroyed in this revolution they thought they'd launch and just create this wonderful utopian, and it didn't work out the way they thought at all, did it?
Yes, no, that's right. In fact, there's a great letter that Morris wrote about that, talking about Lafayette and the others with their lightness of heart, you know, the incredible lightness of heart starting this into motion. And then suffering the consequences, which he really saw from the beginning. Lafayette showed really very poor judgment a number of times, but he also showed that he couldn't control his troops, and that was a very significant failing, that even when he was the most popular, he was the head of what was called the National Guard there, he couldn't, there were times when they just ignored him. And at one point, people may have heard of the October Days, which was when the women in particular led a mob of people demanding bread, and they marched to Versailles. And Lafayette ended up going with them, but he really didn't want to go. He was being forced to go by his troops. And this was at a time when Lafayette was very popular. So, you know, the signs were there that he wasn't going to stay in control.
But then, of course, wasn't there a mutiny there? What was that all about?
Yes, there was a mutiny. I think that maybe was the following summer. Lafayette was trying to show strength as a commander, so he ordered the mutineers shot. But it was considered too excessive a reaction, and there was a strong reaction against that, too. So at one point, Morris said he thought that every step upwards he takes will accelerate his fall. And that seemed to be what happened. By the time the king fell, he was being called a traitor in the National Assembly. So it really was tragic.
And, of course, Morris, Governor Morris, was, you know, associated with all of these things. And, you know, so you get this sort of this overview of history, the American history, the history of the French Revolution. And, of course, Governor Morris is, you know, is an observer of all of these things and really a fascinating insight into the history of that time, which, of course, it really has such a tremendous influence on what's going on in the world in which we live today. Our telephone number, 970-689-8255. If you're out there, if you have a question or on this, the issue of Governor Morris, certainly the part that he played, and I think that the fact that he actually had written the preamble to our Constitution, and yet most people have never heard of him, he said that he had played an important part in the writing and drafting of the Constitution. And yet, of course, a few people have heard of him, and certainly Melody, I think, is really trying to bring out the part that he has played in history. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes, I think so, because I think he deserves that kind of attention, and he deserves more research, too. So I'm hoping that I'll inspire people to get interested in doing more research on him.
Well, there's a long way from being an aeronautical engineer.
It certainly is, but a lot more interesting, I have to say.
I know. Well, of course, I practiced medicine for many, many years, but what I'm doing, I think, now in many respects is probably much more exciting and perhaps even more beneficial, even though I loved helping people. Why, hopefully we can help to shape the ideas and concepts of the next generation. So I appreciate what you're doing, Melanie, and once again, people can get your book at Barnes & Noble's or at Amazon or from ISI. What is ISI?
ISI Books. It's the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. They have a press, and that's who's published it.
And so people can go up on the Internet, go to ISI, and of course, they do write, they publish a fair number of very sophisticated historical works and political works. Anyway, God bless. All of you, friends. Loads of fun. Thanks very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Radio is your best choice for advertising. Radio gets results. Call 1-800-205-6245 and find out just how inexpensive and effective radio can be. That's 1-800-205-6245. KHNC 1360, The Lion. That's 1-800-205-6245. The American Freedom Network is not funded or supported by special interest groups or government programs. The American Freedom Network is not sponsored by advertisers demanding content or programming control. The American Freedom Network is solely funded by you, the listener. Please help keep the American Freedom Network on the air by purchasing one of our sponsors' fine products or by calling 1-800-205-6245 to make a donation. The American Freedom Network needs your help.
Bill of Rights, Article 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of a religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Article 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots, biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom. Good Sabbath.
Well, Dr. Stan, and I think it's so important that people understand the world revolution. We actually have a DVD. It's called The World Revolution. There you'll actually see my interview with the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of the Cuban Revolution, which is a continuation of the revolution that began in the United States in 1776 and continued with the French Revolution. Because behind all of this are secret societies. Now, you need to see my DVD, The World Revolution. It's important. And then, of course, the book written by the Librarian of Congress. They don't want people to know about it, but James H. Bilderstein, the Librarian of Congress, wrote a book called Fire in the Minds of Men, which goes into the secret societies of Europe that were behind the French Revolution. And Lafayette was a Mason and part of these secret societies. Now, Billington does not get into the influence of the secret societies in America, even though he knows about them, and he's done everything he could to suppress the information. In fact, we were able to, with the help of James H. Billington's secretary, get a treatise on the Clintonian Illuminati. On the Clintonian Illuminati, you won't get it any place but Radio Liberty, but we do have that treatise we got about the influence of the Illuminati here in the United States in the early 1800s. But James H. Billington's book, Fire in the Minds of Men, takes you into the secret societies of Europe. And as he says, this revolution began with the French Revolution and continued right up to the revolution in Cuba in 1959. Well, of course, it's continuing today. As in Nepal recently, we had a revolution. And, of course, once again, the United States, as always, is supporting the communists, as we did in the Chinese Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, the Nicaraguan Revolution, revolutions all throughout the world. We support the communists. Why? Because communism is as phony as a $3 bill. We've financed it since the beginning. And you have to understand, we have the best enemy money could buy you. If you have not yet read the Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, you need to get it. You need to get my interview with Professor Sutton, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. We carry the book. We also have a DVD interview with Professor Sutton going to have the fact that we financed communism from its inception. We financed Adolf Hitler. We financed the North Vietnamese and during the Vietnam War so we could have an enemy. And just in the same way that today your tax money is being used to finance Pakistan, which is financing the Pakistani intelligence, which is financing the Taliban who are killing our boys. And you must understand that nothing is as it appears to be. And we're moving into the final stages of the world revolution. And the question is, will they succeed or will we? Will freedom persist or will the occult organizations? And that is what everybody has admitted, because the powerful occult organizations behind the secret societies. And, of course, that's why you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Listen to my talk on the forbidden secret. That's the forbidden secret. And then, of course, my talk on the planned police state and their syllabuses with that. The documentation is there. You need to get it. Please, if any of you are in a position to come to the Monterey Bay area on the 26th of October, we're having an all-day seminar with, and there, of course, Joanna Michelson will be with us. She was a medium and in contact with a spiritual being.